All right, everyone, welcome back to an episode of The Money Seat, the show where I put myself on the hot seat. I bring on my guests. They ask me five questions related to money, finances, whatever's on their mind, and they don't send me the questions beforehand. So I'm hearing them in real time, just as you are. And I'm excited to bring on my next guest today, and her name is Valerie. And why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, Valerie?
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. So my name is Valerie, and I am 31 years old. I'm a little bit about myself. So I've recently actually moved to the Northwest Chicago suburbs as I bought a house in Palatine, Illinois, with my partner and my fur little baby, a cuddly dachshund half lab named Andy. I work at an IT reseller called CDW as a product manager, where I manage and support Cisco's networking and data center business. IT is something I always say that I fell luckily into, and it's been a great career, especially in these challenging times. In my free time, I enjoy everything outdoors, everything from hiking, biking, to even dabbling in skiing lately, even though I've been horrible. I thrive outdoors and I love the beauty of nature. I'm also very curious, so I love traveling, learning about different cultures, and tasting various different types of foods. Lastly, I like to give back to the community, and I've participated in various organizations that center around enabling and cultivating young girls and their passion for IT. So I'm currently on CDW's Business Resource Committee called Women Opportunity Network, where we're planning various skill-building workshops for girls ages 9 to 16, which has been super exciting. I'm really happy to be here and look forward to chatting with you, Rob.
Yeah, thank you. That was by far the best and most practiced and well-thought-out intro I've had so far. So good job. You've done your research. I wanted to ask you, where did you go to school and what did you study?
Yep. So I went to Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, Illinois, and I studied business management with a bachelor's degree.
So you actually are doing something that's pretty aligned to your major.
I am. I feel like I'm a rare case. I heard majority don't. So I've gotten really lucky. I think business is a very broad field. So I've gotten lucky that I'm able to do it and I enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah. And I know you said you're a big traveler, and I know you've come and visited me out in Seattle, which also is perfect for people who like outdoors and nature. What have been, I would say, list your top three favorite destinations you've been?
So I would say Thailand. Actually, a year ago, we were in Thailand. So different times here. Thailand was
right.
One of them. I would say Barcelona, Spain was another one.
Yeah.
And I would say Israel, where I met you, Ross.
Yeah, that's right. And you know what? Were all three of those trips you were with people or groups of people?
I was actually very different kinds. Well, Thailand, I was with my boyfriend for first year anniversary.
Right. Okay.
Ireland. Oh my gosh. Israel was a group of random people that we met and got to know each other, became close friends, which was cool. And then actually Barcelona, it was a trip that we did to Dubai for a work event. And then about 10 of us decided to fly into Barcelona. So it was a group of 10 work people that I really, got to know on the trip. I only knew them from a work element, so it was good to know them on a personal level.
And I would say from a, do you do solo traveling, by the way?
I did. The only time I did it once, and actually I did to Seattle, and then I took the Amtrak into Canada, Vancouver. So I've only done one solo trip. I'd love to do more, but it's a little scary.
Yeah, I was going to say from a female point of view, it would be interesting to know if you do some solo traveling and had some recommendations. I know Seattle's a great place to go. As a solo traveler,
Seattle. I've never done anything besides. I would say somewhere in the United States, probably somewhere. Just look up different safe cities would be a good way to start, right? Like in the Midwest, going to like Milwaukee would be super easy to go to.
That's true.
Drive there, stay there for a night. It's not too intimidating. So I would say start small and then expand from there.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks for giving us a great little info about yourself and a bio into the life of Valerie. And with that, let's get into the mind of her and her financial questions that she has. So let's start off with question number one.
Perfect. So So as I mentioned, my partner and I are kind of looking to plan long-term financially together. And so one of my questions is really, should we be combining finances, managing them separately, or a little bit of both? What would you recommend from that, from your professional thoughts?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So you say your partner, you mean you're together, but you're not legally married, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Engaged or?
Nope.
Okay, so right now you're together. Partner sounds like it's serious, but you're not legally along those lines. Okay.
Correct. We bought a house, so we're taking we're taking the next step. It's, you know, we're definitely making the commitment, but we haven't gotten engaged or married yet.
Yeah, is it a joint ownership of the house?
It is.
And joint mortgage?
Yes.
Okay, so you've actually taken the first step of mingling your finances a little bit together. But that's a good question. I've had someone else ask me, they were engaged, so they were definitely, they were having conversations already with their significant other. But I think it's important to bring it up again that it's something that's very important to have a conversation about, but also to start small, right? So I recommend people who are married or who are committed to each other for life, that if you're committed to each other in your relationship, then you should have a similar commitment financially. Obviously, it shouldn't be a surprise to you, but besides like infidelity, money is one of the top reasons why couples break up or fight or just, I mean, it's crazy. It's infidelity, it's money. Right up there with like in-laws. I mean, it's, you know, it shouldn't surprise you. So usually I say the same things that breed a healthy relationship, money is the same thing that goes in there in terms of having an open communication, right? Hiding extra bank accounts in the Cayman Islands is usually not a great plan long term.
Take that off my checklist.
Right.
Dang it. Okay.
And if you do, and if you're someone who does hide money from your spouse, there's probably a reason why, and there's a trust issue, right? And usually that's a bigger issue too. The money sometimes is just a manifestation of some larger issues. But let's say you're gonna get married or you're thinking about that in the next few years. I encourage people to maybe open up a joint credit card first. That's a good thing to do, and keep that to like, well, we cook dinners together. Everyone has, even if you're not married, if you're living together especially, you're gonna have joint expenses. Right. I mean, that's the fact. You're gonna have a lot of expenses that both of you will spend on yourself as a couple, not as you as an individual. And so it's good to start, once again, a credit card to use that, build up some trust, assuming both you and I assume your partner works and makes an income. Yeah. So
correct.
Yes. Assuming that it's an equal. Yeah. So that's good. So I would start with that. That really helps. It builds up some open communication. It doesn't mean you close your own credit cards at what you currently have. You could just add a new one and start it small. A joint bank account is important. It's probably not necessary right now where you're at. And to be fair, when people do get married, I also say start small. It doesn't mean start putting everything in there. But when you are married, you're considered one entity. I mean, it's how the world looks at you. So if anything goes wrong, you know, you're financially one entity, but you should also act like one entity as well for finances. Starting small is always a better idea for this stuff, especially if one person, if you have kids and then one person doesn't work. And, you know, it's just things get really complicated for when you have married and when you have more responsibilities. But right now, I think a credit card might be a good starting point for you. And also it'd be good to have a conversation. You know, you don't have to say, I have this much in the bank and I make this much. You can if you want. You don't have to. But I wouldn't.
But just starting small.
Yeah. And say, hey, this is, let's go through our budget. What do we spend on stuff that's for us? Oh, okay, interesting. We spend, you know, $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month. Okay, yeah, let's open up the credit card and we can handle that and you go through the statement. And I mean, I'm nerdy with that stuff, so I would find that fun. If you don't find that fun, right, you don't have to go as granular. But it could be a good, once again, trust building experience as well on that end. So hopefully that helps answer that question.
It does. And I think to your point of even going through with your partner, you could also see your purchasing habits,
yes,
of how much you're spending. And that could be good or bad, but yeah, either way, it's at least,
yes,
exposed. And so you're financially aware. You're both aware of what others are spending and how much they are saving each month.
Yes.
Or at least, yeah.
Couples, especially who don't do this early on, it becomes harder to get that later. Sometimes there's a lot of bad habits or resentment that could start off early in a relationship that never gets you know, they just like fester. Yeah, especially on a financial side with one, I'm not going to say husband or wife. It could be just one person versus the other who might be making more and one person who might be spending more. And it's not always the same. And people resent that. I mean, and they usually don't talk about it. So those are all things, once again, on a higher level to just have some good conversations and make sure you're on the same page. I'm telling you, it'll be good. It builds up trust. It's good for the relationship. As well, then you could let the other things in life, you know, worry about that in the relationship, just not the money. So that's a good question. I'm glad you asked that. And let's go to question number two.
Yeah. So question number two actually correlates. So I think it's an ongoing conversation. So again, going back to the house, something that we're experiencing right now is we're looking to do various projects around the house. Mm-hmm. So whether building something smaller of building a fire pit, right, or remodeling an entire bathroom, that could be something up to 10 grand or even saving money in case something breaks, right? So for example, our jacuzzi the other day, we have an outdoor hot tub. The light stopped going off essentially, and so it stopped warming up, and so we freaked out, we called an electrician, and the breaker was essentially down. So it was only $125, but it was nice that it was a small amount, right?
Yeah.
But if it was bigger, let's say in the thousands of dollars. And so I think going back to owning the house and planning for projects, both just unexpected and expected, what would you recommend? Again, knowing some are a little bit larger and some are a little bit smaller as a safety net.
Yeah, and that's also a good question. And I probably will expand a little bit on the first question, what I was talking about, because with homes and with cars, it never feels like it's small, right? The $125, good for you. But I feel like every time my car hits a pothole and I take it to the shop, it's, you know, $2,000 later. Or you have a tiny little crack in something, right? Yep. You're spending hundreds to thousands, right? It's with that stuff, it's always a big expense. So because you own it jointly, right, means you both should be responsible 50-50 for the most part for paying those expenses. So it wouldn't be a terrible idea to have a joint bank account that was like your home repair bank account, where you keep an emergency fund on hand. I would say it's a little bit different if you have like upgrades and stuff you want to add to it than versus if it's already done and you just want to make sure you have an emergency fund. So first, I would discuss with your partner. What's your partner's name again?
Chris.
Okay. Thank you. So the audience knows. Yeah, I know. So anyway, so you would discuss. So you discuss with Chris, what are the things you want to get done in the house and plan it out in terms of one, how much you think it'll cost, and it always costs more. So I would throw 10% more onto everything just to be safe. And two, a time frame, right? So if you're like, I want to get this basement done, but that's a 5-year out plan, I wouldn't throw that in. I'd use maybe 2 years, 2 to 3 years at most.
Okay, is the good.
Yeah, at most that you want to get done. And you know, especially because things take longer. I know Chicago's cold and can't work on stuff all the time. And you don't have infinite money. But one, you want to discuss the things you want to get done in the next few years and budget out that. And then two, budget out the, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 you want to have just for emergencies in general, just for water heater breaking, whatever you have to do, because houses are just always something, right? Especially unless you, I assume you didn't build a brand new house.
No, we bought it used.
Yeah,
I mean,
so it's there's always ready, something.
Things always
in
break,
a few years. Yeah, right. Yeah,
exactly.
A new appliance, all of a sudden the refrigerator needs to go. Right, that's $2,000. Right, I mean, it's just it's nuts. So I would do that, and once you come up with some money or an idea of the budget for both of those. There's nothing wrong with having a joint bank account where both of you contribute, I would say evenly, considering you're both in the workforce making money. It'd be different if it wasn't. You know, start with, let's say you come up with a number of $10,000. You know, there's nothing wrong with putting $200, $250 each a month.
Having just like a set number that we put in place.
To each of you, yeah, exactly. You don't have to do anything crazy. It doesn't have to be a high savings interest account. It could just be a regular bank account. The idea isn't for it to grow or, you know, invest in anything. It's just for there to do the stuff that you want to get done and protect you, assuming, right, you're in here for the long run and you're not planning on moving or going anywhere else. You want to have that saved up. So the bigger question, right, is one, your expendable income, you have to figure all that out and what you have left over. But should be able to do a few hundred bucks a month and then bump it up from there.
Increase it from there.
Yeah, okay. And that would help. Yeah. I think you guys would find it really great at the end of the year if you did that. I mean, you could have $6,000 to $10,000 at the end of the year, and then all of a sudden, bam, you could get the new floors or a new couch or whatever you want to get, or the outdoor patio, whatever you want to do, right? Sounds like you got the jacuzzi already. So
we got lucky.
Yeah,
got
lucky. The jacuzzi. Maybe
came with a house, a nice little cherry on top of everything.
Yeah, you might need. I don't know how people accentuate a jacuzzi decorating outside, but there might be other things you want to get that make it like a hangout besides a jacuzzi, and that might, you know, once again, that stuff is never cheap. And once you graduate to right past your 20s into your 30s, you generally like to buy things that are a little bit better quality, especially if it's your home, right? Once again, IKEA is awesome. I don't think I'd want my whole house to just be IKEA, right? Sometimes I want to pay a little bit more and get quality. So I would have
the nice things in life.
Exactly, right? Well, to be fair, you works very hard for your money, and you should be able to buy nice things because you deserve it. You worked hard for it.
Yeah,
but make sure you budget that too, and make sure you kind of have a conversation. But I think that'd be a really good start, and you guys might find yourself at the end of the year being like, okay, all right, now all this stuff is manageable and we know what we're doing, and you're not going to freak out over anything breaking, which also is helpful. It makes it less stressful to own a home. So perfect. Question three.
Awesome. Yeah. Question three. So I have a 401k that I put about 7% into the account every month. Really I've been looking at, and I also from CW buy their stock. To be honest, I'm not sure how much stock I'm actually buying. But what I really wanted to do is just kind of, I've heard of GameStop stocks, right?
Yeah.
It's in the market right now. And what I really want to do is look into different types of stock, and how much I really want to understand is how much should I start investing in different stocks, and how do I select those stocks that are more attainable to me? Like, I'm a very, I don't want to be aggressive. I'm a conservative type of person when it comes to money. So I guess, how does one individual get into the stock market, identifying which stocks that they want to purchase and how much to put in those stocks?
Yeah, so it's a very slippery slope, because there's a lot of guys or girls in the last few months that have been sitting literally on their toilet and pressing buttons on an app and making tens to thousands of dollars. Now, if they didn't sell out of GameStop or whatever else, they would have lost it all. So it makes the regular person think that they could just click, click, click and do things. And it becomes a little dangerous, because that is more like gambling than what you're doing in your 401k, where you're putting money away in a diversified portfolio, and you're not buying and selling and trading all the time. You're mostly just putting it in and kind of letting it ride for the long term. And so that's more investing. Most people are inclined and better suited to do that, because especially if you're more of a conservative person, it might be great to go and buy a stock you like, but the research that goes into it, the amount of money it could take to buy it, and then knowing when to sell it, it's even professionals don't know when to sell stuff in the market. It's just unpredictable. So it becomes very risky, really risky for people. And I usually deter them from doing that unless they have a huge amount of disposable income, or to do it with money that they could afford to lose. So you went on, Robinhood or Acorns or whatever, Fidelity, whatever trading app you wanted to do, and you put in, $500 on Etsy stock because you like Etsy, the company. Mm-hmm. That's okay. That's $500, right? But all of a sudden you're putting in $5,000 and you're buying these different stocks and you don't know what's going on, and that's most of your money coming in. That's probably not a good idea. So first thing is, you have to figure out how much disposable income you have and how much you're comfortable putting in. The second would be is probably, especially younger people, stocks are not the most efficient way to invest because of how expensive a lot of them are, to be honest. Mm-hmm. For you to get a properly diversified stock portfolio, I'm talking about diversified, so you could buy stocks for $1,000. But if you want to get a properly diversified portfolio of stocks in different areas and different industries and different countries of all different sizes that are quality here, not just like, get rich quick schemes, $10,000 to $25,000 at the minimum is where you want to start. But really, 25 or up to be comfortable doing that, because I would recommend people, getting, there's some great companies, but like, for instance, Amazon, it's a good company. I'm not saying to go buy it or not, but if you wanted to buy it, it's $3,500.
You know, stock?
Yeah, for one share of stock.
That's very expensive.
Yeah, Google, Tesla, those are, once again, they're known American companies, but they're very expensive. So there's more efficient ways for someone like you to get in, where you still get to own those stocks, but you're not actually going out and buying them individually. And so it's what your 401k does, which is like a mutual fund or an ETF. Are you familiar with those by any chance?
I'm not.
So what they are is, imagine instead of, you know, you get your $100 and instead of buying one share of Etsy or something, you would buy one share of the large American stock fund. And in that $100 that you buy of the one share of the large American stock fund, they own hundreds of stocks. So the 100.
So it's like a parent company, an umbrella company.
It goes out and it takes its billions of dollars and buys all those stocks in all over the world, and based on their expertise, because they're the professionals. And then you just buy a share of their ownership. So what happens is your $100, 5% owns Amazon and 1% owns Costco and 2% owns Visa, right? I could go on and on and on. And then you could get your $1,000 and split it out into different funds and have it be diversified. I just say a mutual fund versus an ETF, because a mutual fund will have like professional people managing them, which costs more money, but they're professionals, versus an ETF, which will just try to mirror like an index. So it's not doing a lot of buying or selling. You're just trying to copy the market. And the other one is they're doing the buying and selling, not you. Because I also
just a little more strategic.
Yeah, I guess I encourage people that you know, even for me, most I do some stock picking, but most of the stuff I do is with mutual funds or ETFs, because no one's smarter than the market. If anyone tells you that, please just ignore them, because that's not true. No one's smarter than the market. So I would just try to kind of put it with professionals, let them do what they can. And you don't worry about trying to beat and time the market and get too tricky, because most of the time it's going to blow up in your face. So that's a way to start, because you still get to own those stocks. You're just owning it a little bit differently, and it's a little less risky, right? So if Tesla...
kind of safer to what I'm looking for.
Yeah, especially for people like you who are starting out, right? If you're more experienced, if you're older, if you have more expendable income, if you have, you know, $10,000 of play money that you wouldn't, you know, then that's different. But for your situation, that's not the case. So you have to do it a little bit differently. I also say too that it's different now. People can invest in causes. So if you want to invest in socially responsible funds or in stuff that is aligned to your beliefs, then you can do that as well. And that's something you could do with those funds and stuff. So I would encourage you to start that way. And start small, start with the intro stuff, and as you get more comfortable, you could always expand. Part of my job is not necessarily to say, hey, Valerie, give me your money and I'll invest it for you. Part of my job is to guide people to. So I have plenty of clients I'll do as a subscription model, where they'll give me like $50 a month or $100 a month, and then I'm their, you know, financial guru. And you'll say, Ross, I have this much to invest. I'm going to go on Fidelity. I could do it all myself, but I need some advice on the bigger picture. I need to know how much I should be saving. I need to know if I have too much in international versus too much in the US. I need to know if I have to get gold or currencies, right? A million different things that even the savvy person won't know. And so part of my job is to help you in the bigger picture, because I tell people, don't get caught up in Apple versus, you know, Amazon or Google versus whatever. Just make sure you're taking the right amount of risk for what you want and you're properly diversified and the rest takes care of itself. And don't panic and don't freak out. That's also where I help. I'm like part therapist, where people call me. The market went down right last year, 30% because of COVID. And, you know, no one sold anything and I didn't recommend anyone. And I had a few people call and freaked out and want to go to cash. And you call them and you tell them, calm down. You go through all that. Hey, do you still need the money? No, so don't sell it, right? Nothing's changed. And then in a few months, it goes back and people go back to normal. But it's hard, because sometimes you need someone who's not, it's your money. And sometimes you're too close to the situation and you need someone else who's not you
to take the motion.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. You said it better than I did, but it becomes very emotional for money. And if that's exactly you, which, most people it is, then, it's best to work with someone or get some advice or some help on that or talk to someone, because like I said, most people don't make more than a few percent in the market. Maybe 2 or 3%, but the average market return each year is about 8%. And the reason why is the market goes up and people get really excited and then they buy, and then the market goes down and then they panic and they freak out and they sell. And that's exactly the opposite, right? The market goes up and then you feel good, and then you want to sell. And then if it goes down when everyone else is panicking selling, you want to buy it on sale. But that's counterintuitive to human emotion. So that's why it becomes, right. So it's just a little complicated. And I've talked to a lot of people on this, and especially younger people. A lot of this comes over time and experience. We were very young for 2008, but our parents, they remember that. And once you go through a few of those ups and downs, like last year, you kind of get a better feel of it. But yeah, it just takes some time and it takes some energy. Once again, you if you're an individual investor, as smart as you are and as long as you've been doing this, you're going to do this once in your life for yourself. And me and a professional is going to do this, 50 to 100 times a year for their 50 to 100 clients. So we're going to gain. We're more experienced. We understand this. Just
exactly.
Yeah, just let it happen. But also don't be afraid. It's like a balancing act. Like, don't be afraid to take risk and put some money in the market. Just make sure you know what you're doing. It's just like, yeah, right. Take risk, but not too much risk, right?
It's a balancing act.
It is.
I'm probably not good at it. So trust the professionals to do that.
Just like anything else, right? If my back hurts, if I have an issue, I'm not going to try to diagnose myself and fix it. I got to go see a professional. If my car's broken, you got to go to the mechanic,
exactly.
Right? I can't fix everything. It's a similar idea. Yep. So yeah, it's a good question. Was that question three?
Question three. Yes,
okay.
So we're moving question four.
Question four. All right, let's do
Perfect.
It.
Perfect. Yeah. So we've heard a lot about cryptocurrency. So
okay.
I'm just curious, what do you think about it? What do you believe it? Do you believe it's something investing at this time? And just if you could kind of phrase it to me in a very basic 101 manner.
Yeah. So there's some debates, and this isn't necessarily a right or wrong answer, but my opinion is cryptocurrency yet isn't an investment, because when we're an investment is something you're buying and holding for the long run. I think cryptocurrency is still something that people are doing as more short-term trading. Doesn't mean you can't make money off of it, but people are still buying and selling. I mostly say that because there's just not enough history to prove that it'll be here in 10 or 20 years. But
gotcha.
The idea of a Bitcoin or something, I actually think makes a lot of sense, because someone asked me about why is the US market what it is, and why isn't, why wouldn't I invest in other countries or, Europe or, and they all have different currencies and it becomes very complicated. And I'm like, yeah, wouldn't it be very simple if there was just Earth currency, right? Just a currency. But that's what crypto is trying to do. So whether it's Bitcoin or whatever million other coins out there, it's not a crazy idea to think one day we're going to have a global Earth currency. Especially because everything's so global. Especially because people do business in all over the countries, and it's crazy to have to convert from American dollars to Canadian dollars to Mexican pesos to euro to pounds to yuan to yen to renminbi, right? I mean, it's nuts. And, and that there's a lot more. The kroner, I could keep going on and on and on. So I think that's really where the future's going. The better idea, just like not investing in one stock, is there's ways to invest in maybe the cryptocurrency technology, like blockchain. That's not a bad thing.
Okay.
There's cryptocurrency funds that have not just one like Bitcoin, but I think you can invest in a fund that has like 10 or 20 or 30 different cryptocurrencies. And once again, like I said, I think it's more short-term trading than it is long-term investing. Because it seems a little riskier, because we don't have enough historical data to prove that.
Gotcha.
Just an opinion. I would say, once again, there's a lot more to it than that, especially on the data mining side that I don't pretend to understand. But there's nothing wrong with wanting to be involved in that and finding that to be a small part of 5% of your portfolio, being in that or the technology around that is definitely intriguing because I think that's where we're going in the future.
Okay, cool. Awesome. I think question number five.
Question five. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Question five is more around, so I think I mentioned the beginning of the podcast, I'm 31 years old, so beginning of my 30s.
Yeah.
And I've never necessarily had timelines associated, like I have timelines with other things where I want to be in my career, right? Mm-hmm. But I've never had timelines associated around my financial future. Ooh. Like I should have this saved amount.
Yeah.
Or I should be saving X amount. So I guess what would you tell someone my age, man, young 30s, that are early, I mean, mid-career?
Yeah.
I've been working for about 10 years. So I've saved up a decent amount. But I guess where should I be and what timelines, what resources should I be using? Obviously, a financial advisor is one, or even like online documents that I can read. Where, what can I have to help guide me?
Yeah.
Where I should be and retire at a really good and cash of money,
right?
That's the goal.
Right. So there's lots of good tools to help do bigger picture things. You could go on the internet and look up any type of interest or investment calculator and say, if you have this much money and put this much in a month and make this amount of interest, you know, you'll have this amount in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, right?
Okay.
Stuff like that. So those are all tools that, you know, no one needs me for that are helpful, but they only tell part of the picture. And I'm glad you asked that question because this is like my favorite part of the job, because you could come to me at not any age, but especially in your 30s or even 40s and say, I have nothing and I want to retire, you know, in 25 years. And I'm going to be like, good, let's get started. We're going to get this done. Absolutely. Once again, there's a 0% chance that if someone works with a professional or has help or guidance and has a specific plan, sets it up and sticks to it and monitors it and goes through it over the 20 to 25 years, they're going to achieve the results every time.
Okay.
But it's not easy. It's hard. It takes a lot of discipline and you have to evaluate it. So if we set up a great plan now, but we don't talk again for 10 years, I'm not guaranteeing you anything. But if we're meeting every year and we're changing it based on you got a job, a new job, you make more money, you make less money, you're moving, you have to buy a house, you have kids, you have to save, right? All of those things go into all of these goals and you have to reevaluate it almost every year in order to do that. But someone in your age, for an example, who's in their 30s, even if they haven't started anything, they can still get to where they're going to be in, let's say, 25, 30 years if they save, you know, 15% of their salary in investments and grow that over time at a 5 or 6% rate, which is very conservative. But the hard part, once again, that's why I'm saying online is actually the easy part. The easy part is going and finding all the tools you need. The hard part is setting it up, it's doing it, and having Ross Krauss as your accountability buddy along the way to do it. And it's crazy because I've tried to tell people that our my job and my role has shifted a lot from just calling me and buying Apple stock to being bigger picture and advice driven, because it's just like with anything else, you need help with this stuff along the way. You need someone to hold your hand. You need someone to guide you to make sure you're okay. And that's actually worth a lot more than people think. And it actually helps a lot more. Like sometimes people are like, I don't feel like, sometimes I feel like I didn't do that much for someone, but at the same time, they just feel like they have a positive direction of what they're doing and it could reaffirm.
It's like a consultant.
Yeah,
like
it is. That's really what I do, especially on that monthly fee side model, because the internet is only helpful for, you could look up what a general person should do in who's 31 years old and is living with a partner. Well, there's millions of those people just all over the world, right?
Yeah.
But we need to know what Valerie specifically has to do. And the internet can't tell you that. So you need to go over, when do you want to retire? What are your goals? What do you have saved up? How much you make? How lavish of a lifestyle do you want to live now versus in retirement? How much traveling you want to do, which it sounds like a lot. How much do we have to budget for that traveling? How much things are going to cost, right? If you want to have kids, when and how much that's going to cost? And if you're going to receive any inheritance, and if you are, what's that going to go for? And if not, do you want to set any of that up for your kids? I could go on and on and on, right, about that stuff. And none of that stuff is things that the internet's going to tell you. You have to figure that out for yourself. And then when you work with a person, we could fit everything together and get that set. Very hard to do it all yourself because there's so many variables. As you know, when you throw in a lot of variables for things, exactly. One little thing throws it off. Have you thought...
As you get older, it gets more messy, right? Kids come into play, right. House comes into play. It's just like doing your taxes.
Yeah.
It's much easier when you're 16 and then now that you own property mm-hmm. and kids, all the write-offs, and you get an accountant for that
yeah.
instead of you doing it yourself.
Because I also don't have kids and I saved as much as I possibly can. And the reason why is, first of all, because of compounding interest, the earlier you start, the more it grows mm-hmm. over time and the bigger it'll be. So for instance, you know, someone who's 30 years old and puts in $100 a month is going to have the same value in 20 years as someone who's 40 years old and puts in $250 a month. So yep. every time you wait, it actually costs money. So part of my working with people and my advice to people is to provide you with the one thing in life that's precious, which is time, is to make sure that, yeah, you can't go back and save, right? You can't go back and get that's that compounded true. Interest, but we got to start it now. And maybe you won't need all that money in the future, but no one's ever complained about having too much money. And if they, if they have, then they're just not doing the right things with it. Right. So let's say you get to that point and you have too much money. Oops, we oversaved. Well, I'm sure there's some great charities or kids or family members or causes or something that you'd want to do right with that money.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. There's always something like that. And that's kind of my point and my goal is to make sure that you overachieve, you oversave, you get there and you get there as soon as possible because then it gives you options, right? Maybe you do want to retire at 50. I would love to. You know, I don't want to be working. My parents are almost 70. They love what they do, but I don't want to be working at 70. I really don't.
Me either.
Right? I
Me
want to either. Travel. I want to enjoy things. My previous partner at another firm had a good story that he was in, and I haven't been there. He was in Venice or Florence, some famous city in Rome. And there was a very elderly lady on this trip. She was on had a little walker, must have been mm-hmm. in her 80s or 90s. And he was like, "Why? I can't believe this lady's on this trip. You know, it's cobblestones. You're going up, you're hiking, like, you know, Italy.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. Right. And the guide was asking her, are you sure you want, no, I'm going to do this. I've saved up my whole life. This is my time to travel and I'm doing it. And 30 minutes in, she couldn't make it and Tor had to leave her behind. And the point is that you don't want to wait till you're 80 years old or 90 to do all the things you want to do. And exactly. and it's a shame because most people realize that later on. So my goal is, even if you don't realize that and you don't want to focus on that, I'll do it for you. And I'll make sure that I'm thinking about 30 years from now, Valerie, you know, 60, 50, 60, 70-year-old Valerie. So when that time comes, it's a thankless job because by the time I get thanked, I don't remember because I'll be too old. But it's
you
it's,
should make a tagline out of that. There yeah. should be some sort of tagline.
But it's really true because because so many people yeah. are focusing on the here and now and it's important, right? I also don't want you to sacrifice your enjoyment now. So 30 years from now, Valerie could go to Venice and not have to go through a walker. Well, yeah. you're gonna miss out on too much stuff. So it's a
balancing act.
It is.
It's going back to like having enough money now
yeah.
and saving for the future, but how do you do both?
And most people are so good at the now and they live in the now and they're fantastic and they really struggle on the future stuff. And some people are actually don't enjoy enough of it now. And I work with some people who have way too much cash just sitting in their bank account and you're like, let's go. Let's do stuff, guys. And sometimes it's just the assurance from someone who's a professional to make you feel a little bit better. But yeah, I would say that if those are things you struggle with or anyone listening, I know I love helping people, but I can't help everyone. You know, there's lots of people out there too to help and talk to. And it doesn't mean that it's going to cost a lot of money. And it also doesn't mean that you can't work with them just if you don't have, you know, $1 million yeah. to invest. Right. So it's the idea that people need advice and they need some help and they need some guidance as a life coach, as a consultant, and it's important to go through that. But also everything can get done. You set up a plan, you talk to your partner, you go through all that, you make a budget, you know what you want to do, and you also know what your current situation is, and then you work together and we kind of fill in the rest.
Exactly.
And awesome. I find that exciting. I think it's good to see it evolve and grow over time. But I do want to end on that end with that it's not easy. This isn't easy stuff. And for a lot of people, they don't like to do it. They struggle with it. You know, it's math, it's finance, it's money. It could be awkward, right? There's a whole bunch of stereotypes yeah. and stigmas that people don't like to do, which I get. But once again, that's why I'm here, so I could do some of the stuff that you don't want to do. But two, it's really necessary. People spend more time planning their travel to Disney World than they do on their budget and their retirement plan. And that's nuts. That's crazy, right? And for me, it blows my mind. Obviously, it's more fun to plan a trip to Disney World, but it's not more important. It's definitely not more important.
Of course, yeah.
And that's also a goal of the podcast too, is to kind of educate and make people aware, like people like you and the millions of Valeries out there who didn't learn any of this in college or high school because they don't teach classes on this. And you learn it in the real world, and plenty of people hit their 50s and are like, damn it.
It's too late. Yeah.
That's my point. It's a lot of people listening to this, it might already be too late. And so my job is to make sure for as many people as possible, it doesn't become too late, because it's not. If really, even if you're in your 40s, I could probably say 20 years, we could get you a modified version of what you want, even if you have nothing. Once you have 50s or 60s, there are people that I've had to talk to that I said, it's not possible. You know, you're 60 years old. You haven't done anything yet. We can't retire at 70. So you have to have some sad, tough conversations. And I hope I never have those with people who are our age who start now. And the weird thing about it is it's only going to get worse for us, because we're more reliant on us more than ever to create our own wealth and retire. As we get older, there's going to be less government support for us. So, you know, our parents are getting some form of Social Security, and who knows what's there for us. So it's only going to be more reliant on us to create that wealth for us, especially if we don't come from it, or if we don't inherit it, or if we don't win the lottery, which is probably
very small percentage of us are doing that. Unfortunately, we're lucky enough to win that.
If you do, then you probably don't need me for the most part. I can help you with planning an estate, but otherwise, you're probably good. You win the $500 million jackpot Powerball, right? You're good. But for the 99.99% of everyone else, there's no quick get rich quick scheme, and there's no golden answer. It's hard work. It's discipline. It's a plan.
Yep.
And it's staying to it. But man, it's rewarding. Once again, if you're retiring in your 50s, Valerie, and traveling all over the place, and everyone else is looking at you, they're going to be jealous. And it's because they didn't work hard and they didn't get a plan together. Mm-hmm. But I'm promising you.
That's very true.
Yeah. So hopefully that helped. That was question 5, right?
That was.
Hopefully I'm trying to inspire some people to take action and get their finances in order. Because you don't have to have a degree. You don't have to know everything to do it, right? Just kind of...
I think you have to find the right resources, such as yourself, to be able to. And I think going back to your point, just relying on different professionals. There's different ones, whether a doctor, mechanic, and money is just a big, important part that is just not many people like myself. I hate doing that. It's mundane. It's not fun
to me.
And I want to rely on other people. That's why I hire an electrician. I don't find it fun to do that.
Yeah. All you have to do is just figure out what you want. And I know I could take it from there for the most part. Yeah, you just have to know. If you don't know what you want, then we'll never get you there, because there's no direction to go to. But for the most part, your only work in this is, okay, what do I want? And what are the tangible goals? And, you know, what kind of lifestyle do I want to live? And if you want to live a lavish lifestyle, there's actually nothing wrong with that. You just have to understand that we got to plan for that. Right?
Yeah.
It's just, once again, I want you to live however you want, whether it's a cabin, a cabin in the woods, or it's, you know, downtown, you know, Manhattan or Chicago condo, right? Whatever it is. So yeah, my goal is to make you happy and make sure money doesn't prevent you from doing those things. Because, man, outside of health, it's really what does it for people. Well, if people are healthy, then it's money. And it hurts me. It hurts me that that prevents people from doing it, because it feels like such a stupid thing to make you not want to do what you want. Money? Ugh. Money, right? Ugh.
It's the currency. It makes the world go round.
Yeah. I don't want...
But you have to be careful about it.
Yeah. I don't want you to be a slave. I don't want people to be like a slave to it or worry. But yeah, no, it is important. It is really important as well on that end. Awesome. Perfect. I'm excited for your questions. I appreciate your time on the Money Seat today, Valerie, and asking some good questions and kind of letting the world and the listeners get to know you a little bit more.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for your time, Ross. I appreciate it. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure we'll chat soon.
Perfect. Thanks for being here, Valerie, and join us next time on another episode of the Money Seat. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professionals prior to making a decision. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful.